How does the divine example help move us towards caring for the needy? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, your host and study guide, author. We continue our series on the least of these. My conversation partners again today are Jody Washburn and Matilda Fry, both faculty members of the Walla Walla University School of Theology. Thank you for your willingness to help. Let's go with that leading question. How does the divine example help move us towards caring for the needy? Now, the lesson focuses on kind of on the Ten Commandments. This is in the book of Exodus and focused on the Ten Commandments. Is there anything there in the divine example that will help us?
Backing up a little bit from the giving of the Ten Commandments to the opening of the story of the deliverance from Egypt, I find some of the lines there in Exodus 2 and 3 to be some of the most beautiful in summing up how God interacts with humans. And that is that he is the God who sees and he is the God who hears. So in Exodus 2, 23 and 24, right, the Israelites are groaning, crying out. Their cry for help went up to God and God heard their groaning, right? And then 25, God looked on them and was concerned about them, right? He was moved by their setting. And in the next chapter, when he's speaking with Moses about the reason for bringing them, right, for sending Moses to bring deliverance, he says again, right, because I have seen and I have heard, right, that is why we must intervene. And so this idea that God sees and he hears, and that's the catalyst then for action, in which, interestingly, he always involves people, right? He sees and then he empowers someone else to be a mobilizing entity in bringing about the deliverance.
You mentioned there Exodus 2:21, where God looked upon the Israelites. There's a very interesting phrase there which somehow really caught my attention. It just simply, straightforward translation, God saw and God knew. God knew.
He knew.
He knew, see. And so that's where we come from. Now, in the material beyond the Ten Commandments, there are a couple of quotations there that we should point to. Exodus 22, for example. This is what God says in the additional commands. You shall not wrong or oppress a resident alien, for you were aliens in the land of Egypt. You shall not abuse any widow or orphan. If you do abuse them when they cry out to me, I will surely heed their cry. And then Exodus 23:9, you shall not oppress a resident alien. You know the heart of an alien, for you were aliens in the land of Egypt. So in the additional laws, God gets very pointed and says, these are people in great need, and you must show them great care. Now, this was a very difficult time for Israel. I'd like to just toss a question out here. This is a more personal one. Have you been able to look back on difficult times and see in those experiences a stronger motivation for helping others? When you've been through difficult times, does that make you more aware of others when you see them in difficult times?
I think it has the potential to.
You understand the situation better when you have experienced it yourself. Yes. You know what it feels like. You know what it means for you personally, maybe even for the family. And so you can much better relate to other people and help.
There's an interesting paradox. Walter Brueggemann talks about how prosperity breeds amnesia. Right? Maybe if we've moved too far past our moments of pain and slavery, we easily think that we've moved past by our own good work and we are separated. But at the same time, experiencing pain is like a first step. It like opens the way for true compassion. Otherwise, there's no understanding that can be that first step in acting out God's compassion, being moved, right? Knowing what the people are going through.
Now, there's, I think, one weakness when you've gone through an experience to too quickly and too readily say, I know exactly how you're feeling.
Very easy to do and very problematic.
Very problematic, because every experience is different and we don't know how they're really feeling. So we should learn empathy, but still be a little bit careful with how we use our tongues.
Yeah. Think of how often we find God and Jesus asking questions. I think we could learn a lot from that. Ask questions.
Ask questions.
Listen.
Listen.
Listen to.
Now, Our official study guide talks about the Ten Commandments as a blueprint for communal life, and the official study guide suggests that we not read the Ten Commandments too narrowly, wants to broaden out. And I think what the author is wanting us to do is go back to Sermon on the Mount, where you broaden a number of the Ten Commandments. But let's explore that a little bit. How are the Ten Commandments a blueprint for communal life, working together?
I think I think the first thing that comes to mind when I reflect on that question is how they would have heard the Sabbath commandment, for instance, right? That includes the animals and the slaves, right? They were the exception, and now they're being told, no, this command to rest and worship includes, wait, it includes us too? Wait, what's going on there? And I think, wow, what a stunning example of how all-encompassing this vision for a new life, right, was.
Now, next week, the whole lesson is dedicated to the Sabbath, so we'll have a chance to explore that. But let's look at other aspects of the Ten Commandments. How does this become a blueprint for a life that would include the care for the vulnerable?
When you read the Ten Commandments and every time it says, you shall not, I like to point out that the you is a singular one. God speaks to the individual and not to the big crowd of people gathered on Mount Sinai, at the foot of Mount Sinai, but to the individual person inside that crowd. No one can disappear or step in the background. God speaks to each person and creates this this relational part here. And when God says, I am your God who brought you out of Egypt, I have done that already. You are a free person, a person saved from slavery. Now you will never do and then follow the different do nots. But it is this from this part of relationship, and that sets the basis for everything, for the life that is going to happen between the person and the one who receives the Ten Commandments and God. So I will never go against a God who has made me free from all the bounds of a past life. So I will never do anything harmful to another one. And that would include each one of those 10.
Now, let's play around a little bit with the Hebrew there, because, you know, I have a colleague, one that I admired a great deal, Malcolm Maxwell, who would make the Ten Commandments and Mount Sinai sound as if it was a glorious visit to a nice meadow where you hear the melodious voice of God floating down through the... And he would point out the Ten Commandments actually are simply description. You won't kill. You won't steal. But there are two commands that are of a different structure. They're infinitive absolutes. That's 4 and 5. And you can't avoid the fact that those are, in fact, in a command form. But what about this really scary tone that comes from the Ten Commandments? Is that helpful for ex-slaves, or shouldn't God have been a bit more gentle with them?
I tend to think the scary tone is something we have implanted into the text.
You think so?
I think so.
Well, I don't know. I actually do have a question, because at the end, after God finishes speaking, the people are so afraid, and they come to Moses and says, please, we cannot have this every time. From now on, you go and speak to God, and we will listen to you. So there is a certain kind of fear involved at the end, and it may have to do with the mega loudness of
the thunder and
that we, as described in chapter 19. So,
and you don't get too close to the mountain. I mean, even if your pet animal gets too close, you know, you must stone it. So this is a pretty scary setting. And in Deuteronomy chapter 5, it's really quite fascinating when the Israelites tell Moses, look, Who is there of all flesh that has heard the voice of the living God speaking to him out of the fire as we have and remained alive? You go near. You know, so they didn't want to face that anymore. And when God heard it, he said, I've heard all these people, what they've said. They are right in all that they've said. If only they had such a mind as this to fear me and keep all my commandments always. So in that context, it's clear it's not fear of the Lord in the sense of awe. This is real, genuine fear. And God says, that's good.
From the part of the people, it feels it is genuine fear. But then Moses turns around and says, I wish that you would be in awe of God.
Yes.
He turns the verb into a noun, and it's the awesomeness of the solemn awesomeness of the event, maybe.
Now, are there any other aspects of the Ten Commandments that would help us in a communal setting as a guide to life, especially those who are disadvantaged? We've talked about the Sabbath commandment. We'll talk more about that next week. So what else is there that might be helpful for those people who've come from slave background?
I do think it will give them a new perspective on their future. In the 400 years of slavery, they are under a boss, under a slave master, mm-hmm. so they are not the ones in charge of their own lives. From now on, these seem to become guidelines, a blueprint, like mm-hmm. you like to say, Alden, and will set the basis for a new kind of life. In the Old Testament, it is always in the context of what we call a covenant mm-hmm. making mm-hmm. that is taking place here, a new relationship mm-hmm. starting. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And if you broaden out past the Ten Commandments themselves, I mean, you've noted in the study guide the significance of Jubilee. Mm-hmm. And that carries through even into the New Testament. And often it's interesting because we can easily weasel out of it if we read it very literalistically. Mm-hmm. That, you know, I bought a house, but in 49 years, it's going to revert to whoever owned it before. Well, this is not, you know, we could say practically applicable. But I think that the idea behind these laws is definitely applicable in our modern society. That being that every single family have enough land to support their own family, right?
It's constantly equalizing.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. And we can have that ideal, I mean, call it idealistic, but we can have that in our mind as we think mm-hmm. of policy, as we make personal decisions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's one other aspect I think we should remember here when it comes to the scary part of things, that in the additional commands, the death penalty is there for every single one of the Ten Commandments except the last one. That's fairly sobering. Now, the Ten Commandments don't include the penalty, which gives them a larger, broader footprint, which makes it applicable to us without bringing the penalty in. But our time is up. I want to thank both of you for helping here, and I want to thank Abby Wissink, our program engineer, and all of you for listening in. For the Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.